satellite system. Go to our homepage to order or call Rick Satellite at 816-228-1801. First Amendment Radio receives no compensation for this service. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Alan Watt here. I'm standing in for, filling in for Darren, who's busy tonight. And tomorrow night, Jackie and I will be doing a show together, and then probably Wednesday as well. I got this at short notice, so I've nothing prepared to talk about. However, this morning I got up, and the sky was full of these amazing, the new super latest version of the chemtrails across the sky, coming in from the west, really, using the winds, the westerly winds, to bring it across the country. And and these were amazing new types of very artistic trails that were laying down. Brand new types of polymers, which have little fluffy tails on the ends of them, as though someone had combed a cloud and then did a little tuft at the end, so they're all very uniform, these little twists, these little tails on the end of them. So it's quite a spectacle to pan the sky and take all of this panorama of chemtrails in. Such an amazing project on such a huge scale, and yet to realize that maybe you're the only person in 100 miles that actually knows what's going on, maybe even further, that's even more amazing. Today I talked to someone who was photographing these clouds in the nearest town, and she didn't know, of course, that these were fake clouds. And so I filled her in on what I could tell her in about half an hour, without overburdening her with the truth or the history of all of this. But maybe, just maybe, I got someone else to think about what they're actually looking at. But she did comment that it looked so pretty. And My sort of reaction to that was, well, they do look so pretty because they're so uniform. The ends of them are so uniform, with these lovely little twists on, these little curls, which don't occur in nature. And yet, people who haven't been observing the sky over the years as they grew up and lived have no memory of what natural clouds look like. Those who are being brought up today won't know. They'll think this is all quite natural. And quite a few years ago I said that one day we'll see these clouds glow in different colors. I've already seen it last year in the summer, where you see rainbow ripples going through some of them. But I think that the old Beatles song said marmalade skies in one of their songs. We'll certainly see the marmalade skies and maybe different colors or shades of strawberry to put in there for effect. I think it's so far advanced now that they could pretty well do anything and the public would think it was all quite natural. And that's the beauty when the parents don't know to tell their children. That's the beauty for the elite who rely upon this mammalian indoctrination, knowing that if you can indoctrinate one generation, they can't warn their offspring of the dangers that are around them, or what's even natural anymore. This is the 27th of March, by the way, 2006. for those who still have some kind of memory to go by. And I had to look at my watch to make sure myself. So I was going to talk about these trails. As I say, I had nothing set up to talk about, really. But I don't want to go off into the news because I don't like following the news. To me, the news is basically irrelevant as to what puppet is put in front of the public to declare this law or that law or whatever. They're just the puppet men. Those who have studied the whole agenda or as much of it as available to the public are well aware that the front men we see could be interchanged with other faces tomorrow and the same agenda steamrolls on. So I don't get caught up hitting the firewalls that they put up there for us to hit, and that's the politicians, the front men, who are well chosen long before the public even know their names or the supposed party they supposedly represent. They're irrelevant to the agenda, really. It's only important that the public believe it's all real, and that way they don't question beyond politics. And of course, all of this is designed by people, at least, if I use the word people, which are definitely beyond politics. The global government has been here for a long time. At the moment, it's primarily invisible to the public, which makes sense. You would never put your real leaders into the public view in case anything happened to them. You'd always put your front men there to take the heat, and any real accidents that could happen, well, you can replace them quite easily. They're just puppets. But you'd never put your real people in front of the public. We know some of the higher players, certainly. We know the Rockefellers have been involved in this agenda for 100-odd years at least, beginning with old Nelson Rockefeller, who was set up to be the controller mainly of power and energy in the United States. And I say he did not work himself up to it. These guys never did. They always put their own men in charge of anything to do with power and economics. You couldn't work your way up in their system unless they allow you to come up. They open the door for you to come up, and you must serve them. Old Nelson Rockefeller basically did what he was supposed to do. He hired the thugs that set fire to independent oil rigs. It burned them out of existence. All the competition was basically killed off or burned out, and he came up with Standard Oil at the end. But he was backed by bigger guys behind him and authorized to do this. He was the guy who also turned the militia loose on the miners that were employed by him, who were on strike, and they shot lots of them. Then they thought, well, how can we make this man Rockefeller, this penny pincher, into a sort of hero for the people? How can we change his image? And so what they did was they hired two men to create a new public image after he was blamed for the massacring of all these miners and their wives who were living in tents. And the militias went in and machine gunned them. And so they hired a guy called Gates, who was a PR specialist in public relations. And of course, I'm sure it's an ancestor of Bill Gates, the gatekeeper for Microsoft and so on. And also another guy who became the Prime Minister of Canada. That was his reward for creating the new public image of the benefactor Rothschild, Rockefeller. And he was put in as Prime Minister of Canada for the Second World War. That was his payoff. So this is how the club works, you see. You scratch my back in high masonry, and I scratch your back. And the public can never have a clue what's really going on because the media is there to make sure that they don't. It's all public relations, building images, very much like show business. In fact, it's the same crowd who create the images in show business and give us the superstars to follow who do the managing of these guys and create their public images for us to swallow. Recently, Mr. Harper, the new Prime Minister of Canada, who was picked by the Bilderbergers and attended their meetings before he was supposedly elected, he gave a speech in Afghanistan to the Canadian troops. And in the speech, he made some unusual statements that were sort of un-Canadian. They were almost Hollywoodish. And the first statement he made was, and this was on a comedy show on Canada, they showed you this. They showed you a clip of Mr. Harper saying, "We won't cut and run to the troops." And then they went back to the host of the show, and he says, "Isn't it strange Mr. Bush said this?" And then they showed Mr. Bush a couple of days beforehand giving the same speech with the same term in it, "cut and run." "We won't cut and run," he says. And then this host went back and forth between the two, Mr. Harper and Mr. Bush, showing you four other things he said in the same speeches, which were identical. And, of course, they're identical because they were both using the same script writer. And this is repetition. It's a form of almost psychic driving, as they call it in Tavistock terminology, the Tavistock Institute, which came up with all this behavioralism and behavior studies in society, where they found that something had to be repeated at least 8 times to the public before the public started to parrot those phrases or terms themselves. And that's what they do. That's why during the build-up to the Iraq War, Condoleezza Rice and Rumsfeld and Powell and all the rest of this little menagerie would appear in front of the public, and they would say, "weapons of mass destruction," over and over until we're sick of it, you see. They were making sure that the public, during their own conversations with each other, would start using the same terms, in which they did. But they got to be repeated 8 times before the public could pick up on it and start doing it automatically. Well, of course, Mr. Bush and Mr. Harper are the same script writers, and they must be on board, you see, and on track with each other, and the same path, so they use the same script writers to make sure that the Canadians and Americans, who are now basically joined more than just at the hip since last March when they signed the United Americas Agreement, March the 27th, I think it was. This is the anniversary of it. They're making sure that they're given the same speeches, because we will all be one big amalgamated Americas. That's where it's all heading. This agenda is very old. You'll find it in the writings of Karl Marx and Das Kapital, where he talked about a united Europe, which would be first for a trading bloc, followed by a Pacific Rim conglomerate, the head of which at that time hadn't been picked, and followed then by a United Americas, each one with a form of local government, which, so in other words, your national government becomes a local government under the head of a world government, which is, of course, the United Nations. So, a long time ago, the Brotherhood was well aware of where they were taking the world, why they were taking them this way. And we can go back even further to the writings of John Dee and Francis Bacon and Queen Elizabeth I's court. And this was the period when the Rosicrucians first appeared on the scene with their manifestos, this word manifesto. And they claimed that through science they would overcome all the problems that the elite were facing. They didn't care about the ordinary people. They never identified with ordinary people. In fact, they had no problem differentiating themselves from ordinary people in less polite terms than they use today. So they wanted a world 500 odd years ago that would be run by an intelligentsia, a scientific community of experts who would serve the guardian class, the dominant minority, as Charles Galton Darwin called them, and Huxley called them. Aldous Huxley of Brave New World. So they basically parroted an even older agenda, going all the way back to the days of Plato, where he wrote The Republic, the perfect society, the utopia. And he talked about the guardian class as well, who would technically be in charge of the whole system worldwide, helped by a type of specially bred lower class, inbred, specially bred, selective breeding, in other words, to create specific human types to serve them. Small squat guys for mining, and tall guys for picking apples off trees, and he had it all planned down through basically selective breeding, where the guardians would choose the mates for men and women for their genotypes, basically, and specially breed them for a purpose. They've never lost sight of this goal. It's ancient. And so it resurfaced in the times of John Dee, and he talked about the creation of a British Empire, to Queen Elizabeth I. The Empire itself, although it was called British, could be called anything. In other words, they could move their headquarters from one country to another. But it was to be based on a form of what they called free trade. And those countries which would be part of a worldwide commonwealth. And it's an interesting term, remember, commonwealth. It really means the wealth of the commoners, because they certainly wouldn't benefit from it. It was to serve the elite. They did not believe in independent trading, but they had this idea of free trade, so that those countries and those big corporations, which existed, by the way, in the 1500s, the British East India Company was formed at that time, huge corporation, with the members being of the elite and nobility being the sole members of in partnership with each other, and shareholders. So free trade to them was basically the setting up of a same governmental system, which would eventually be worldwide, with authorized corporations who'd be allowed to trade between those countries with no impediment to trade or their trade, no tax barriers. Anyone who didn't join them would definitely face taxation on import duties and exports and so on. They'd be penalized and shunned, in fact. They wouldn't be allowed certain goods in. They'd be kept out of the loop and suffer from it. So they'd be forced to ultimately join. But it meant also adopting the same political system, the same rulership system, really, is what it is. It's a form of rulership. And they use the term democracy, a term which has never had a fixed meaning in the last few hundred years. And every 20 years or so it takes on a new twist. Supposedly it was based on the British government, and people forget that only the landowners and nobility at one time could vote, up until really the late 1800s, and most men and women, not just the women, but most men who owned no property or who rented, didn't get the vote to the First World War. So hundreds of years before that, they were still calling that democracy, when the nobility alone could vote. It was never meant for the ordinary people, the commoners or serfs. Today, they've given us the illusion that what we vote for matters. In that way, they found that when things get terribly bad after 4 or 5 years, the people don't revolt. They simply vote the last lot of corrupt guys out, thinking they can get better ones in. And politicians are fantastically good for doing exactly that. They work on promises. and they voice the people's concerns when they're running for elections. They'll mention the corruption of the present government or supposed leadership and the scandals they've been through, and as long as they promise to acknowledge this, that they also see this, and if they get in power, well, my God, they're going to give you utopia and clean things up, then the public don't revolt. They simply elect the next new bunch in that gives them the promises, and give them 4 or 5 years, and then vote them out when they're just as bad as the last bunch. That's the real meaning of democracy. It's a sham for the public to keep them in hope that 4 years down the road you can change this bunch for a new bunch. That's the hope of democracy. But if anyone who's studied this agenda with the secret societies, and yes, there are secret societies, or societies with secrets, as the Masons call themselves. The Masons, even the lowly Masons, are told that there's two types, you know, that those who are enlightened or illumined, and all Masons, even up to the third degree, become illumined when they see the light. They see, they ask for the light, and the blindfold's taken off, and then they're lifted up by the Grand Master with the proper grip, and they're now announced to their brothers, their fellow brothers, their brethren, who are also illumined. And the other class of those who have never been through these silly rituals are called the profane, which means base, or those in the darkness. The elite call them the commoners, the common public, who are useful, and this is called the natural order of things. Albert Pike, who was basically the Pope of Freemasonry in the 1880s, and who wrote his Morals and Dogma book. I say his book because anyone who's read it and who's read a lot of books can tell when there's different hands and different chapters, different penmanships. And Albert Pike's is no different. There were teams of people who put that together, and too many specialist areas, from the reading of Hebrew and the Kabbalah and so on, to ancient Greek and Middle Greek and etc. Psychology, mythologies, the religions of India. That took teams of people to put together. And all the heroes they give people today are no different. They have teams working for them. They appear like supermen to the general public because Joe Avery says, geez, I couldn't do all that by myself, and you're darn right you couldn't. No one could do it all by themselves. And that's how the technique works, because the public are unwilling to follow an ordinary person who's talking reason, because he's really not famous, you see. The public want to worship someone on two legs who dresses better than they do and lives in a better standard of living than they do, and that's why we're taught to worship millionaires, and that's why we won't listen to reason. There was a book written many years ago on logic, and I think the title of the book was called Straight and Crooked Thinking, and it was a textbook really for logic and reason. And this went through this whole system of how the public are taught to reason, or not taught to reason, but to follow experts and people of wealth. And one of the examples was to do with Hyde Park in London, where orators, any orator, you can be an orator yourself, even if you're a tramp. A tramp is a vagabond in Old English. It's a new meaning today in North America. But a vagabond could take a soapbox and stand up in Hyde Park and draw a little crowd and spout off what he thought of life, you see. And the public still go there today and watch this kind of thing going on, and they have a good laugh and a chuckle and throw insults at the person who is nobody. Even though he can be speaking absolute truth, penetrating truth. However, if someone is built up by the media to appear in some big club or theatre in London with a few letters behind his name and walks on the stage with his duck suit and his bow tie, the public can hear the same kind of stuff, and suddenly it's very important what this person says. And yet it could be the same tramp dressed up. The perceptions change because we're trained in a specific way from birth to worship what we call success. And those who run the world are never short of giving us people who they claim are successful. And whatever they speak, we follow. It was interesting that Carl Jung, who was a psychiatrist who was way ahead of Freud, in fact, Freud was never he had no degree in psychiatry. He simply had the media to build him up into the Superman, because his job was also to change society's way of looking at things and to base everything on sex. But Carl Jung, who was far more intelligent, talked about this phenomena of training the public to believe in experts. And people should really look into some of Carl Jung's books, knowing, remember, that he also was a very high Mason. His dad was the head of the Rosicrucian Lodge for Switzerland. So Carl Jung had grown up in a milieu where nothing was forbidden to speak about. All topics were open for discussion. Whereas the people below them, who were still steeped in religion and taboos, would avoid certain topics because it wasn't genteel enough. It was impolite, or it was simply against God. So, for an understanding of human logic, Carl Jung's the one to understand. For a study on someone who put his God, who used to be above him, above his head, down to his lower head, you should study Freud, because that's where he transferred it from above his head to his lower head. And everything evolved around sex then. Freud's job was to destroy human emotion and human attachments to people and base everything on purely hormonal responses. He helped to create the beginnings of the culture for what he called free love, a movement which had started in the 1880s onwards with people like H.G. Wells, the author. For more on that, read some of H.G. Wells' non-fiction books, since Wells was a founder of the Fabian Society, and they said they had to convince the public that free love was natural, promiscuity was natural, because they had to destroy the family unit, which was the only thing stopping the elite from totally dominating the individual. To get to the individual, they had to get through the whole family, and a small family is like a tribe. They'll stick together, they'll stand up for each other. So the family had to be destroyed, and the only way to do it was to start pushing this free love, as they called it. This took off in the 1920s with the Roaring Twenties, when they brought in Prohibition. They put the Bronfmans into Canada from Russia. That's the break time coming up, so I'll continue this after the following announcements, which will shortly be coming up in my earphone, I believe. And I'll try and keep on this track that I'm on. So please hold on till the second half. As I say, I think it's coming up shortly. I usually hear the music, but I don't hear anything right now. I thought I still had 2 minutes to go. Well, I'll continue talking until something happens.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at firstamendmentradio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You're listening to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Hello. I'm back again. And I was talking about the Bronfmans being brought into Canada in the 1880s in preparation for the role they would have to play in setting up the booze industry, really, because they had all planned out that they'd give prohibition a go. Prohibition created more alcoholics than had existed before that, because more people, more youngsters, went into this naughty thing of booze cans, and it made it a very exciting place to go. It was very bad and naughty, and the police would snoop around, and they could pay for their high-priced drinks and have the music there, the jazz that was sweeping the country, which is all timed to come in at the same time, of course. For more on the jazz scene, look up the history of music and psychological warfare. You'll find that Lennon actually put out a team to kidnap a Jewish guy in New York who was trying to find ways of altering people's moods through types of music, and he was creating this new type of jazz, and he was kidnapped by some Russians and brought over to the Soviet Union. And they did use jazz throughout Europe, except for Britain. It didn't take off there, but you'll still find the jazz houses in Denmark and Germany, etc., all remnants of this movement to create discordancy, etc., nihilistic type music. So the Bronfmans, an official history anyway, by the Bronfmans themselves, states that they were just poor farmers who didn't do any farming, and when Prohibition came along, lo and behold, they just knew what to do. These little dirt farmers could they actually bought a liner, a sailing ship, which could take booze from Canada to Cuba, bypass all the laws and get into the States. Plus, they smuggled lots across the border into the States. And how they did it was they made a pact with Seagram's whiskey off Scotland. They imported the barrels. They sold the stuff in Canada. They then leached the whiskey out of the barrels, the wooden barrels themselves, by adding battery fluid, sulfuric acid, which they then mixed up with their own brew and sold that as high quality booze. And that was the beginning of the big Brockman's Seagram empire, all made through the times of prohibition by selling illegal booze and running it across the border into the States. Tremendous organization. And of course the guys on the other side, including the Kennedy family, that's how they rose to prominence, by taking part in this big brotherhood chain of illicit booze cans. Big money. They also smuggled drugs as well, of course. And it's also strange that the Brockman's name in Yiddish means whiskey man. I guess that tells you their true destiny. There's a good book by Peter Newman called The Brockmans, a very good history on this. Peter Newman tells you at the beginning that he was the second authorized biographer to write about the Brockmans, authorized by the Brockman family themselves, and he's careful to tell you in the first chapter that the first guy who was authorized just happened to fall out of about the 50th floor of a tall building when he was going through the records of the Brockmans. So when he was telling you beforehand, there's a lot more to this, but he couldn't very well tell you. So that's the reality of the world we live in. These things are done on huge scales backed by big money in order to change culture in a certain direction and to build certain people up into mass fortunes, which then are used under the guise of philanthropy. Big, a very important word, philanthropy. Then they would fund certain NGO groups to push forward agendas which politicians would go for and sign into law. That's the big thing behind charity works and philanthropy. And again, for more on that, read Albert Pike, the Pope of Freemasonry, Morals and Dogma, where he said that we shall become masters over the masters of the world by gaining all the money and using philanthropy, you see. So this is how the world is run. There are no grassroots movements that exist long who are authorized because they can't get funding. The ones who make major changes in your life by pretending to speak for the people, the animals, the trees or the grass or anything else, those are the guys who are funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, as is most universities in America and Canada. They get grants from the Rockefeller Foundation, along with certain topics they will forbid to be spoken about or taught. And that's how the world is really, really run. Money runs the world. And those who run the money make the decisions. And the masters behind them do all the planning for it through think tanks and simply pass it on down to the guys at the bottom. That's the real world we live in. As they were doing the Roaring Twenties in Europe, in America, and creating the massive depression, of course, same banking boy, same scams, they turned countries like Germany into sin cities, like Berlin. And the CBC did a three-part documentary series, I think a four-part actually, on sin cities. And you can find them in the CBC, the archives.ca. Very worth watching if you can get them downloaded, or transcripts of them. And they show you footage of a devastated Germany after World War One, where women were selling themselves for peanuts to live. And they had huge halls where these producers, and Germany was the top country for movie making at that time, run by these particular producers who eventually fled to Hollywood when Hitler came in. But you'll see these incredible dancing girls doing all the same dances you eventually saw in the 30s and 40s from Hollywood. They call them hoofers, these girls. That's how much esteem they held them in. And the only difference is in Germany they were stark naked. There was no shame when you're hungry, you see. And every pervert in the world was traveling over there to indulge their fantasies in these countries which had been shattered by the Depression, and morality was being sold for peanuts and food. And of course these producers brought these same dancing girls with their formations of dancing like flowers, and they'll come in unison like sea anemones, and they simply put a skimpy uniform on the ones in Hollywood and duplicated it there, because free love was to be promoted, which it was. But the fallout prior to the 1960s was tremendous, because they didn't have the birth pill. The orphanages couldn't keep up with them. They didn't have the well-organized and funded abortion clinics to take care of all the wanted side effects of free love. And so they went back to the drawing board during the 40s and 50s and gave us lots of cowboy shows and cowboy movies, where nothing much happened that was non-political, and the scare of the McCarthy era was still running in the Hollywood producers, who were in hand in glove with the same guys in the Soviet Union. And so they churned out dozens and dozens and dozens of boring cowboy movies where nothing much happened, you know. But then the 60s came along, and bang, out came pop music, and out came new fashions with miniskirts. Just sort of overnight, out came the strange drug called LSD, which was being thrown by garbage bags full over every university's wall all over Europe and some parts of America. And free love, of course, was being promoted once again, but now they had abortion clinics, they had the pill, they had everything working for them this time. They had government-sponsored psychiatric clinics to take care of all the burned out LSD heads who ended up with permanent psychosis, many of them, and so the agenda went ahead with much, much more success, because the intent, going back to H.G. Wells and free love of the 1880s, was to destroy the family. Morris Strong, who works for the Rockefellers and works for the United Nations, and who in his 70s runs all over the planet doing his master's work, with tremendous energy, of course, because he's given a superior form of health care than level one reality will ever see. Maurice Strong said at the Earth Summit meeting which he hosted, and all he did was reiterate the agenda that one of the other Rockefellers had drawn up for him. But he said at that meeting that the last bastion against the state being supreme over the public was almost totally destroyed, and that was the family. And those remnants that still existed as family would come under tremendous attack now to totally obliterate it. In the last few years, since we've come into the age of Aquarius, and knowing what Aquarius means, I've explained this on Eye on the Future Radio. com. You can check that out. I'll be on there tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern. I've explained on there and on Jackie's show last week what Aquarius really stood for. It's the Ganymede story of Greece. Ganymede was raped by Zeus after falling into the sea. The most beautiful, handsomest guy in the whole of the Grecian islands. And so he was buggered by the big boy himself, you see. Which tells you that was the era where the new man would come forward, the basically the new type of man, you might say, and on road to creating another type to come. Not only do you see the new man, we see the new woman, and I'm sure you'll see them walking around in your own neighborhoods with little Elvis Presley haircuts and the big arms and boots. So this is the new man and woman for the age of Aquarius, because the old type, the male and female, must go. And so the family unit is gone. Once that's gone, you have no normality to compare anything to. Culture becomes flux and fluid. And when that happens, anything can be run through. Any changes can be made, and there's nothing to compare it to. So you go ahead, you along with it. And eventually they'll bring forth a new type, a hermaphroditic creature, which will be self-reproducing, probably when injected by scientists at a certain age. It can produce its own offspring, and it may even have its reward for serving the elite by being able to clone itself or reproduce an exact duplicate of itself, the true Ganymede Aquarius type. You'll find that the Jesus story incorporated into the New Testament, the seeking out of the colt that Jesus was supposed to ride into the city. And so he tells two of his guys to go into town and find a man with a pitcher of water. And that's him telling you that his triumphal reign would last until the age of Aquarius, because that's Aquarius he's describing, the man with a pitcher of water. They give you the clues of the agenda, because this agenda is thousands of years old. In Judaism, the rabbis say it came around 4,500 BC. That's when the plan for the great work was born. And the Masonic temples, if you check the dates of construction, because they always put the date where the foundations were laid in the temple outside, there's two dates. There's the one for our era where it was constructed, and there's the one as AL, Anna Luciferos, after Lucifer. That's what it means. So they have the modern date with plus 4,500 years. So the Masons have a consensus agreement with the rabbis that that's when the great plan was born, to create a new type of society, a society run by experts. And as the Illuminist Thomas Jefferson said in his own writings, he said that we, meaning the Illumined Ones, Illuminati, he said, we are the natural aristocracy, the intelligentsia, those who have proven an interest in science, they can actually alter things in the world, are the natural aristocracy. Not the natural ultimate nobility, but the natural aristocracy. Going back to Plato, they would be the helpers of the guardians. Here we are today watching the final, going through the final phases of the destruction of what was, in order to create that which must be. That's the Masonic term, that's a phrase they use, because being Masons who build society, the structures of society, just as stonemasons built cathedrals, as they were building up the new cathedral, they were dismantling the old. So they remove that which was in order to take for that which must come, which must be. And that's what's happening today. We've watched the takedown of society. We've watched the state take over control of children. As Lord Bertrand Russell, who worked for the British nobility and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, said, he said, we used to think we'd have to remove the children from their parents in order to totally condition them to serve the state. That way they wouldn't have contamination, mental contamination by their parents. But through experimental schools, which he ran, he found that if he could get them at the age of 2 at kindergarten, for even 3 or 4 hours per day, through a special scientific indoctrination, then any input that the parents would try to put into the child in the evening would be of no avail. And this is very successful. So it's more economically feasible too, because now they can leave the schmuck parents to bring up the state's child, you might say. So they're very economic minded. They believe in efficiency. The world that's to come and is in progress right now is to be a world where no one will exist unless there is a function for you in that society. There's to be a massive reduction in population. This has been going on through sterilization, through inoculations, from at least the 1950s. Prior to that, they used different kinds of foods which had similar effects, and they'd tell you it was a health food or a fad or whatever, like the soya bean fad. But since they perfected inoculations, which are bio-warfare techniques, you see, perfected in laboratories, they can make sure that a guy will start to lose his sperm count in his early 20s now. And now that they've found that the average male at 25 in the Western world has only 25% live sperm compared to the 100% of live sperm of the guys who lived in 1950. What's changed since then? The inoculations came in big time, like the polio vaccines in the 1950s. And that's the connection. The same with autism. We see we hear about autism and how one in 50 now got autism. It used to be one in many, many thousands, but it's a new type of autism compared to the old. Old autism would always be apparent from birth, where the child wouldn't go through even the early milestones, as they're called, up until we say Dada and Mama. Today, at 2 years of age, roughly, when they get a whole set of inoculations, they've come up well in the normal pattern of milestones. And after they have the brain fever that comes with it, that the doctors tell them is normal, and not to worry about it, they're suddenly autistic, and they don't—they're back to 1 month old type of thing, a mental age. And this is the damage that's been done to the brain. And now the subcategories of pure autism, and you have all the attention deficit disorders, etc., and various other categories of the same thing. Until now, every school has special classes for this, because it's the new norm. It's the new norm, you see. It didn't happen before, but it's the new norm. And Plato, who got all of his information from the ancient Egyptians, he studied in Egypt, was taught all of this, that society is like clay. Man is clay on the potter's wheel. He's infinitely malleable. He's the most adaptable species on the planet. So no matter what's done to him, he simply adapts to it and doesn't question the whys. Zygmunt Brzezinski, whose specialty was mind control and psychotronic warfare, and you can read between two ages, this man who advised so many presidents, including the present one, it was Department or Secretary for War for one or two of them, he tells you the same thing. That shortly the public, he said, this is in the 1970s, shortly the public will be unable to think for themselves. They'll be so carefully trained that they will leave all reasoning to the media. And if the media doesn't mention a certain topic, the public won't repeat it or talk about it themselves. They've given over the right to reason, and they expect the media to do it for them. That's how simple it is today. He said that they'll be unable to talk normally about anything except what they've been downloaded with on the previous night's news. That's happened. Coupled with inoculations, coupled with the UN's agenda to literally drop the IQ through, again, inoculations. And read Arthur Koestler on that, Koestler, on The Ghost in the Machine. He worked for the United Nations on this project. He had to dumb generations down to bring through this new system of a specially ordered society, much smaller society, which is to come very shortly to serve the elite. And of course, if all our faculties were working, we'd fathom all of this out very easily, and there'd be a great mayhem caused. So it makes perfect sense. What do you do to offset that? You make sure that people have lost a few brain cells, in the critical thinking ability centers to pull all of this off. This has happened. This is the bad news. In most people, it's happened. Not in everyone. Not in everyone. But now, of course, they've been stepping up inoculations, and I forget how many dozens of inoculations a child gets before the age of two now. Their immune system is being destroyed before it's even developed. And all of these inoculations target the brain. That's why you have a fever centered in the brain. And where you have a fever and inflammation, you have death of cells. That's what inflammation does. So what happens with inflammation in the brain? You lose brain cells. Gee, this is rocket science. Everyone's looking for something to come. All the bad things is to come in some foul, sudden swoop. And the reality is, it's been going on for a long time. And most people alive have been through it in their whole lifetime. It's been going on in their lifetime. Now with the spraying, this is what we started with. I'll jump to what Rumsfeld said after 9/11. The next day on the news, at least it was shown in Canada, when asked how he would cope with a major crisis in another big, big city, he says, "Oh, we're all prepared for it," he said, "to stop panic." He says, "We have vast quantities of aerosolized Prozac and Valium to spray over those areas." Well, since these characters are bringing in the whole New World Order that Mr. Bush Sr. talked about 2 years running, on September the 11th, 1990, and then on September the 11th, 1991, a Masonic play, you see, on the beast, because read Revelations chapter 9, verse 11, that's a Masonic revealing, you see. That's what they mean by it. The creature from the pit would be unleashed. The creature of war is what it means. Their system. And that's why they gave us 9/11 for the emergency number. They're always laughing down their noses at us because we're so stupid. We wait for the media to tell us these things, which they won't. Because the media is an essential arm of government. They give us what we think is reality. And if they don't mention the nasty things, well, we won't think of them for ourselves. Or we'll think it's unimportant. It can't be important because the media would tell us, wouldn't they? Well, here we have the 1 minute bell. And as I say, I'd invite you to come on tonight, 11 p.m., eyeonthefutureradio.com. That's out of Vancouver. But I'll be on at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And come into my website. It's called cuttingthroughthematrix.com. It's being updated now. I'll have a lot more stuff on it next week. And I hope you listen and you can learn something and maybe change something. May your God go with you, whoever or whatever it is. All the best. Alan.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a